We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Navy Federal is proud to serve over 8 million members and is open to active duty, military, the DOD, veterans, and their family members. Receive a lifetime of membership benefits, like a credit card APR average that is 4% lower than the industry's, member-only exclusive rates, and more. Visit NavyFederal.org for more information or call 1-888-842-6328 or download the Navy Federal Credit Union app today. Message and data rates may apply. Visit NavyFederal.org for more information.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me as always over there in beautiful and snowy and wintry New York City, my man, the new father, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Big Zillow day for me, Ty.
Zillow?
Big Redfin and Zillow day. I'm not moving. I have no plans to move.
Whoa. Hold on.
Hit me. Yeah.
Redfin was in the news this past week because of a house in Pennsylvania. Is that the house you were looking at?
With the sex dungeon.
That's right.
Is it Maple Glen,
Pennsylvania? Something like that. Yeah. 50 Shades of Maple Glen. Right.
Yeah, the house set up really nicely in the first 30 pictures. Then picture 31, like, oh, chains. Great. Awesome. Yeah. I love that they're so confident that there is full on S&M play.
Just living your best life, man. Put it out there. See what happens.
No, I made reference to it because it's just disgusting out. And I'm cooped up in an apartment because I have a almost 3 week old. And all of the sudden, as you can imagine, living in a New York City apartment with a 3 week old, you're like, oh, this is not an acceptable way to live.
It's gotten a lot smaller, right?
It has gotten much smaller. But the good news is we finally get to go to our recruiting show, our annual recruiting show with Brandon Huffman. Now that the season has finally, the cherry on top for me, obviously, was a longtime Florida State commit, decommitting, and I think going to Maryland. If you saw that today, That's like the last major domino.
Right.
That, listen, Willie Taggart and having commitment issues. Who could have seen anything happening along those issues and along those lines? But, very excited to have Brandon Huffman on from 24/7 Sports. He is their big dog that covers everything nationally based on the West Coast. So obviously I enjoy a lot of the insight that he has about the Pac-12 and their schools. But we're going to go across the entire country. A lot of interesting classes, movement up and down and around, new coaches and how they've affected things on the recruiting trail. So this is legitimately one of my very favorite shows because Brandon is built from head to toe with recruiting information.
He is an encyclopedia, and I say this in earnest because
that and brisket, I should add.
And brisket,
there is
sure.
brisket there.
To be fair.
Yeah.
I like to think that on all of our off-season interview shows, I learn something new from our guests each time we talk to them. But it's especially true whenever we talk to Brandon about recruiting, because I don't know. I mean, I guess we're doing a college football podcast, and to some degree, sure, I pay more attention to recruiting than maybe the average college football fan. Okay. But I still feel like I come away so much more enriched with college football and recruiting knowledge every time we talk to him. I just can't follow it. Nobody can follow it as closely as he does. Nobody has that level of detail that I expect that we're going to hear momentarily from Mr. Hoffman again from 24/7 Sports. So I'm excited to learn more from Brandon. We would also encourage you, don't just check him out at 247sports.com. Also check out the fine work he's doing for the Avery Huffman Defeat DIPG Foundation. We talked about his foundation and his plight against the IPG a couple years ago, but Brandon is doing God's work with his foundation. Yes. Check it out at AveryStrongDIPG.org if you'd like more information on the good work that they're doing.
Yeah, the same awful situation that took Chad Carr, if you remember, Lloyd Carr's grandson a little while ago. So they do fantastic. There's events on the West Coast. So yeah, it's AveryStrongDIPG.org.
That is correct. All right. Yes. So we are going to get into it here with Brandon Huffman and talk all things recruiting. As we said on last week's show, we gave it some time to percolate, to fester, to really set into the cast iron skillet. And now here we are. I don't know why I went cast iron with that. Maybe because I cooked on it earlier.
You got your head on cast iron. I like
that's
it.
That's right. We've seasoned the pan now with all things recruiting, and it's time to evaluate with our good friend, Mr. Brandon Huffman. Have a listen. All right, Dan, joining us yet again, we just made it through a recruiting cycle. It is a long-standing tradition, unlike any other here on the Solid Verbal. We bring on our friend Brandon Huffman, the national recruiting editor from 24/7 Sports, to talk through all things recruiting. Sir, how are you?
Dan, Ty, I now feel like this recruiting cycle is complete. Hearing your voices lets me know we're at the end of a recruiting class and ready to start this madness all over again.
The last time we talked to you, Dan was childless, and now he isn't. We need some first month advice for him.
Oh, man. You know, the whole thing about sleep being overrated, it truly is. You're not going to sleep, but you're not going to sleep at all anyway for the next, 18, 20 years. So don't try to sneak in those naps. They're not going to make a difference. You're still going to get woken up in the middle of the night without any kind of warning, and it's going to ruin your whole day. But then you hold that little guy or little girl, and you're just super excited that the sleep can be meaningless, and because it usually is.
And that's a good way to get into this, because I agree. I tried to take a nap today while the little man was napping. Don't feel any better. I just feel like my day continued. This is a good way, though, to continue on, because you probably near the end of the cycle, pretty worn out. It's a tiring thing, although it's split up a little, which might make it a little bit easier. So we'll start here. What are your impressions of the way that things are split up now with the early signing period, with the now more traditional signing period still existing at the beginning of February? How has it affected things after a couple of years?
Well, I think it's starting to trend to more and more guys deciding in December. And I think with more kids getting offers earlier in their high school career, they're done with the recruiting process. There's no need to drag it out. So you're seeing a lot more early commitments. You're seeing far more early enrollments. Remember, there was a time when it was just quarterbacks that would try to early enroll. Now it's everybody. You're seeing, you know, half a recruiting class trying to enroll in time for January so they can be a part of spring football. And I think you're going to end up seeing it become a lot like the NCAA basketball recruiting cycle, where you have the November signing period, and then there's a few guys that will sign in April after maybe coaches move around, after guys declare for the NBA. But with the way the recruiting period now is in December, and it's only a 6-week gap, I think more guys are going to trend towards signing in December. There'll still be guys that'll have to wait until February for a variety of reasons, whether that's official visits or whatnot, or they just want to see what potential coaching changes could happen, or if guys are leaving at a position where maybe they're being recruited and they want to see what the depth chart looks like. But I think more often than not, December is going to become kind of the key recruiting and signing period more than February has.
We've heard more about the transfer portal, the so-called transfer portal, over the last couple weeks and months than I can ever remember in the previous 10 years of doing this show. What do you make of the prominence now of the transfer portal. I guess the prominence, the growing number of transfers, high profile transfers that we see. How does that affect recruiting?
Well, I think it's going to, maybe bring up questions when you have one school that has more guys that they probably were expecting to be in the portal. I think Penn State had somewhere near double digit schools and players in the portal. I think when you see schools that have multiple guys, it'll either speak to two things. They already have a lot of traffic there on the depth chart, or why are guys looking to leave the program? I also, not that there's anything to question with Penn State. I mean, obviously, they've had a good run under James Franklin. Just using that as an example, is that going to be used as a negative recruiting tool against schools? You're also going to see, you know, why are increasing amounts of players at a certain position leaving and consistently leaving after this first year? We'll start to see news cycles, and maybe one school keeps losing young quarterbacks or whatever it may be. That could hurt them recruiting that position down the line. And I think what it is it's going to, you know, leave a lot of questions to be asked of the coaches. Why are so many guys getting to your school and after a year wanting to enter the transfer portal and wanting to leave? What's going on? What are the promises that are being made when they're being recruited that are not being kept when they're freshmen that is making them want to leave? So I think that's going to be something that coaches are going to have to take a part of. And I also think it's going to have to be one of those things that they now have to start weighing in when it comes to recruiting the players that they're trying to replace them with. These guys are in the portal. More often than not, they want to leave. They want to get out of here. So now we've got to start recruiting maybe an extra player at that position. And we only were going to bring in two receivers maybe, but now we've got a receiver that's leaving. Now maybe we have to bring in three just to help our numbers. So in the middle of the cycle, and especially later in the season when it seems like guys are going to want to be entering the portal, is when they figure out during the season they're not playing. It may cause some reshuffling of the deck a little bit for positional groups and how you're recruiting that specific position with the way the numbers are ironed out.
You mentioned quarterbacks enrolling early, and also with the transfer portal, the dominoes of various positions, and obviously no position more domino focused than quarterback, because only one guy can be on the field at the same time. And so this year's quarterback class, even before JT Daniels enrolled early at USC, was not seen as particularly strong or deep. So at the top, or even beyond the top, who are some, I guess, upside guys, both based on their own talents and the team situations in which they might find themselves?
Well, I think you can, you know, the first one you would look at would probably be Jaden Daniels at Arizona State. You know, he was the number two dual threat quarterback in the country in this class, and Arizona State kind of came out of nowhere to get him. He had been leaning towards playing at either Cal, UCLA, or Utah, and it really looked like a UCLA-Utah battle for him, but then he sees the season that Manny Wilkins has. He obviously sees what Herm Edwards was able to do in year one, and the fact that there really wasn't any kind of incumbent there at the quarterback position. They had, you know, some younger quarterbacks that had come in, but they already had two verbals in the 2019 class, and then Jaden Daniels made it the third. Because he's the most similar to Manny Wilkins and what ASU has done offensively, I think, you know, and obviously even with Joey Yellen, who was another four-star quarterback out of Mission Viejo, and then Easton Long, a three-star quarterback out of Oregon, they clearly wanted Jaden Daniels. So I think that that may give him the edge in terms of being the guy for Arizona State down the line. He's already enrolled, working in spring practice. But then you also, speaking of Arizona, Spencer Rattler out of Arizona, I would have thought he would have had a chance to come in this spring and maybe earn the starting job, or at least, you know, give himself a shot at the starting job. Obviously, he's a true freshman. There's going to be other quarterbacks there. But with Jalen Hurts grad transferring, maybe that's a nice way for Rattler to kind of ease into the role without being thrown into the fire right away. Obviously, playing for the quarterback whisperer in Lincoln Riley, you know, you expect Jalen Hurts to have a big season, and then Rattler can probably be the guy that takes over for him, or any of the quarterbacks that are there, maybe they battle for it. But I think, you know, Rattler will still have a chance to compete for the starting role. I also think that Jaden Daniels, I mean, those two guys are kind of intertwined in that they were the top quarterback at Pro Style and Dual Threat out West. And, you know, Arizona State, because they couldn't keep this kid in Phoenix, they had to go after Jaden Daniels. And I think they both factor in heavily.
Let's stay out West, but also not really stay out West since it's a national story. California got completely raided, and Jaden Daniels obviously goes to Arizona State. But you look up and down the West Coast, Oregon and Washington succeeded in California, USC and UCLA with unexpectedly down recruiting classes, even with the lack of stability or new coaching staffs at USC and UCLA. But even beyond that, whether it was Texas coming in and getting a couple of big playmakers, even Clemson doing really well, Oklahoma, Michigan, a lot of schools really came in to the Golden State and plucked really high level talent. Why is that?
You know, I think it's a combination of a couple of things. Obviously, USC's in what seems to be a lot of disarray. And then they lose Cliff Kingsbury after the 3 weeks or so he spent on campus. There was the questions about Clay Helton's job. Then you have Chip Kelly, who kind of has an unorthodox and unconventional recruiting style that didn't seem to really emphasize recruiting until it was too late. So you take those two times. Plus, you take just the general feeling for the last 15, 20 years is that West Coast kids are probably the most open to leaving their region than any in the country. So schools know if they can recruit and they really try to focus on a kid out West, he's easier to convince to leave home than maybe kids in the Midwest or in the Southeast are. So then you take the fact that you've got Brew McCoy, who, you know, he's from Southern California, where Tom Herman's from, one of three Texas commits or signees that USC had targeted. They already had a commitment from DeGabriel Floyd before he ended up flipping to Texas. Brew was enrolled, and then he flipped to Texas. Then Chris Adamora out of Mayfair High School, they had offered before his junior year. He also went to Texas. So Tom Herman's going to be a presence in Southern California, which is his former home. Chris Steele, top 10 player from Southern California, going to Florida. Henry Toto, the top player in Northern California, he goes to Tennessee. Zach Charbonnet, the top running back in California, he goes to Michigan. Then Joe Nagata, who I think, you know, even though he was the number nine player, I think he more than anybody besides Brew McCoy kind of speaks to the success of what, you know, Dabo is doing, but also how hard it is to keep those kids local. He goes all the way across the country to Clemson. Dabo comes to California to get him. Here's a kid who comes from a school that produced Washington's four-year starting quarterback. Not only that, but his older brother Ariel is a linebacker at Washington. And Washington never really seemed to be in the mix for him. So that's, you know, five of the top nine players in California leaving the Pac-12 footprint. And that is going to get into the players in Arizona or Colorado that also left the Pac-12 footprint to go to other schools and to other conferences. And then you have two players in Southern California, Mikhail Wright and Kayvon Thibodeau, that Oregon comes in and plucks. So you're not just dealing with national programs, but now you're dealing with the Pac-12 schools coming into your backyard and taking these guys.
So since you mentioned Tom Herman, I have to ask about this. Obviously, we're going to get to number one Alabama, number two Georgia in the final 24/7 composite rankings. But at three, you've got the Texas Longhorns, followed by Texas A&M and the Aggies at number four. This jumped off the page to me, if only because I'm desperate to ask this question. Are we now setting up a Biggie/Tupac-style rap battle on the recruiting trail between Texas and Texas A&M?
I think so. And I don't think that, you know, Tom Herman will back down from trying to raise the ire of Aggie fans in the state and to try to, you know, remedy having to fly and recruit against Jimbo Fisher. So yeah, I absolutely think we're in that because both are going to be entrenched there for a while. This is different than, you know, when Kevin Sumlin came into A&M and that was the back end of Mac Brown's career, or it was him recruiting against Charlie Strong. I think we now have a front row seat to what's going to be a absolutely fascinating recruiting battle between those two. And with now social media, there's going to be a lot of shade being thrown subtly and pretty obviously between those two and their coaching staffs and the recruits and the players. So it's going to be very popcorn worthy to watch those two because they both can recruit. They both have shown that they can coach and develop. And now they're battling in the state. Jimbo just has that little advantage where he's got the state of Florida where he's got experience, whereas Tom Herman has California. So now it becomes, you know, which state is more open to leaving? The Florida kids going to A&M to play for Herman, I'm sorry, for Fisher, or the California kids feeling free to leave California and go and play for Herman at Texas?
Above them, though, of course, is Alabama at one, Georgia at two. You look through the classes, the thing that jumps out at me, at least on the Georgia side, is how heavy they went on defense. Nolan Smith, of course, the number one overall player, Nakobe Dean, Tyreek Stevenson. All these guys are loaded for bear on the defensive side of the ball. It is apparent to me that that had to be a strategy by Kirby Smart.
There's no question. And then you throw in guys like Trevon Walker, who, you know, one of the new features on 24/7 was our five stars. We each named our top player. I thought Trevon Walker was the top player that Georgia signed in this class, even though I do love Nolan Smith. I mean, Trevon Walker, 6'5", 285. So he did it at each level. It was on the defensive line. He got good linebackers. He got good DBs. And I think it's very clear that Kirby is offering just as, you know, filthy of a defense in terms of the talent level there that what Alabama has, and, you know, the ability to not just go to Georgia and to play for him, but then turn around and get drafted highly. And I think that that's what, you know, really makes what he's doing there so quickly really help with getting this recruiting really rolling like it's been the last couple of classes, is he's now shown in those 3 or 4 years he's been at Georgia, the player development, the player, the way the players come in and where they came in under Mark Richt, but then he got 2 or 3 years with them and they're turning into first round picks. And guys are there. They see that. N'Kobe Dean was a guy that Alabama coveted majorly. He decides to go to Georgia. You have Nolan Smith, who Alabama was trying to flip late. He'd been a long time commitment. And I think that's a great blueprint to follow. You know, so now it's a matter of keep on adding that talent on the offensive side of the ball, keep developing that talent on the offensive side of the ball. And they got that when they flipped George Pickens, who'd been a long time commit to Auburn, on signing day, kind of in a shock. One of the big shocks of the day was here he was, a 2-year commit to Auburn out of Alabama, and he announces for Georgia. That's how you quickly pass Alabama. They're not doing it yet, but that's how you position yourselves to pass Alabama, is you're not just adding the talent on defense, but you're adding that talent on offense, because we know Nick Saban's been doing that, especially these last few years.
When you look at Alabama, Brandon, do you look at this class and say, okay, they addressed a need, I understand why they did this, or are they literally just showing off at this point, collecting the talent that they are?
You know, it's funny because there are two players on signing day that they thought that they were going to be able to get. One was Chris Bogle, who had been committed to them, announced them at the All-American Bowl, and then flipped to Florida. And then Henry Toto out of De La Salle goes to Tennessee instead of Alabama. And Alabama fans were bemoaning the fact that they didn't land those two. All that would have done was made the gap even wider between them and Georgia in this recruiting class. And they've just done such a good job of recruiting and evaluating and developing that you could lose guys that are top 2 or 3 players at that position that you think you have, and you still have by far the best class in the country. And that's just what's scary for Alabama, is that even when they lose a player here or there, they still have a Rolodex in each position of just top level players that the rest of the country wanted, whether it's on the offensive side of the ball, whether it's, you know, on the offensive line, getting Pierce Quick and Evan Neal, whether it's Antonio Alfano, who actually finishes 24/7 Sports as number one overall player. And, you know, he was overshadowed at times by Nolan Smith, by Zach Harrison, by Kayvon Thibodeau, by Trevon Walker. And Alfano comes down to San Antonio and dominates all week to move into the number one spot. And that's what Alabama does. Even the guys that maybe are a little bit more off the grid, under the radar a little bit, they go to a national event and absolutely dominate. And then they get to Alabama and they do the same thing there. So it's just, it's uncanny what Nick Saban has been able to do. And the fact that he's been able to add so much talent on the offensive side of the ball these last 4 or 5 cycles for a guy who's been known for all the great defensive players, I think that's just becoming a problem that we still haven't been able to see anybody completely figure out outside of Clemson these last couple of years.
And one of the things that Nick Saban did, it looks like 3 of the top 6 players from Florida ended up going to Tuscaloosa. And it was certainly a down year outside of the Gators for recruiting in-state among those powers in the Sunshine State. But Dan Mullen, in his first full cycle as Florida's coach, he finishes very well with his class. They get into the top 10. How do you feel about, I guess, the Gator class overall? And looking forward, do you imagine the state's powers will do a better job of keeping the very top end of the state's talent at home, especially now with Miami looking a little bit more stable?
Yeah, and I think with Miami, if they can recruit the state like they've recruited the transfer wire this season, mm-hmm. they're going to be in good shape moving forward. And I think, obviously, Manny Diaz is the guy that, you know, is going to connect with a lot of these recruits. And he's a reason that a lot of these recruits are feeling the keys, especially going into the 2020 class. So that gives them stability with somebody who's a little bit more. And you know, obviously Mark Richt was a stable coach at Georgia. He was there a long time. And, you know, he brought that maturity to Miami. But, you know, with Manny Diaz, you've got a guy who's just going to get after it. He's going to bring that energy to match against the Willie Taggart, to match against Dabo, or at least going to try to do what he can. But then you throw in what Mullen's done. And I mean, I think he showed immediately what kind of effect that he could have on recruits in this class, not just from the state of Florida, but really in the Southeast region. You know, will Willie Taggart get it figured out? That's the good question. That's the million-dollar question. I mean, he's had about as bad a first year as possible on the field and off the field. So he, you know, I think that's going to make that seat that much warmer for him if he doesn't get it figured out quick, because Miami's starting to take a lot more of the headlines and the attention back with the hiring of Manny Diaz, with these transfers they have coming in. And then obviously Dan Mullen did a fantastic job recruiting-wise with this class, and then showed a lot of really good promise in the first year as the head coach with the New Year's Six Bowl win.
We've talked about some of the top five, top 10 classes. I'm curious, in your mind, who put together a class, maybe outside of the top 15, 20, 25, that just... that made your antennas buzz a little bit, maybe in the way that like PJ Fleck did the year before, where, you know, he recruits Georgia well, the IMG Academy well, where he's put together, like, who has put together, I guess, that top 30 or 40-ish class with a lot of those high upside three-star guys?
Yeah, I think that, you know, they did land a handful of four stars, but I think the class that definitely is the one that makes you stick out, because you're not used to seeing them, is Purdue. And they finished at number 25 in the country. Obviously, all the talk about Jeff Brohm leave to go to Louisville, and then him staying at Purdue, I think that showed that, you know, he's going to be there for a little while longer. He was able to spurn the alma mater to stay there, and I think that helps with recruiting, not just in this class, but even moving forward, because now guys will see when a coach says, I'm not looking to leave, I'm not looking to go anywhere, and he turns down his alma mater, who's kind of at their breaking point and desperate, he is willing to stay where and match what he says. And so, you know, holding on to a guy like George Karlaftis as a result of him, staying at Purdue, he was a top 50, top 100 player nationally, was heavily recruited by everybody, and decided to stay at home, and he's going to Purdue. David Bell, another big-time receiver prospect out of Indianapolis, big physical kid. You know, he had plenty of options elsewhere. He's staying and going to Purdue. Milton Wright, kid that I got to see at the Polynesian Bowl, and I absolutely loved watching him play. Another big physical kid, 6'3", 200 pounds. Interestingly enough, he was from Louisville, so when I talked to the Polynesian Bowl, he said he was really watching to see what Brohm did because he wanted to play for him. Maybe that would have been in his backyard, but when Brohm said that he was sticking with Purdue, Wright stuck with Purdue. So you get a couple of those guys that are the top-end type players. Those are obviously guys that you want to really build your class around. But then you got a guy like Kyle Bilodeau, who played in both the All-American Bowl and the Polynesian Bowl, out of Virginia, coming in. And you just get guys like that that maybe, you know, they're coming from different conferences, different conference footprints, going out into Tennessee, going into Texas, going in to Virginia. I think that's showing that, you know, Brohm is willing to try to recruit against anybody. And this class was really evident of the recruiting efforts that he put on, both in-state and outside the state.
Let's stay in the region. Michigan made a big leap, arguably, to an area of the rankings that they should normally be. Is that strictly a numbers thing that they could take more guys this year? Or did something, I guess, change strategically with the top of their class coming from very clearly a wide, wide national net?
Yeah, and I think that just kind of goes back to what Harbaugh knows what he could do when he was at Stanford. He recruited nationally. Stanford wasn't a school that just because they were in California were going to only recruit California. They were going to recruit nationally. And I think, you know, Harbaugh finally really had a lot of success out west, where he has some good ties, but he really recruited coast to coast. And I think part of it was he didn't necessarily get himself into the spotlight as much this offseason and this recruiting cycle like he did in maybe previous years, where, you know, 2 years ago it was all about Najee Harris and trying to be a part of the satellite camps. The year before it was going into Alabama, taking his shirt off. I think he just kind of laid low and just really recruited this year. Instead of making it about PR and constant going viral, this year was just about getting out there and doing it the old-fashioned way and recruiting. He went into Ohio. You know, he got Eric Ah. He got Mazi Smith to stay home in Michigan. He went down to Georgia to get Jalen Perry, as well as Chris Hinton, who was the son of the former NFL star, but then went out west to get his quarterback in Cade McNamara out of Nevada. Zach Charbonnet, who was a top five running back nationally, went to Oaks Christian to get him. Got Giles Jackson, a kind of an electric do-everything guy out of the Bay Area, went and got him. He went up into Connecticut, went down into Florida, went to Illinois, and really kind of covered all four corners of the country and then everything in between, but did it kind of in a more subtle way this year, which I think kind of maybe saved the negative recruiting from schools that probably were doing a better job of doing that the previous 3 years when he seemed to be in the headlines all the time.
You mentioned the state of Ohio, obviously some news with Ryan Day taking over for Urban Meyer. And if you look at the recruiting rankings for what they're worth, Ohio State all the way down at number 14, which of course is a spot that I'm sure a lot of other teams around the country would love to have. But for Ohio State, it represents a bit of a drop off. They're perennially in the top five, certainly in the top 10 in most seasons. Looking at their recruiting class, how do you think this plays out now moving forward under Ryan Day?
Well, for one thing, I mean, their class is small. I mean, it's not from a lack of talent. They just were the only class, even in the top 25, that didn't have more than 20 players signed. They only had 17. I think the next closest class was at 21. So just from a pure number standpoint, it may not add up to being a top 10 class, but you look at the talent that they pulled in. They're bringing in 3 5-star players. One of them was a guy who had spent time at number one in the country, in Zach Harrison, who's kind of a physical freak, more of a basketball player, 6'5", 253-pounder, who's still trying to figure out the game of football, but has such great athleticism. And this is a guy that many people were pegging to go to Michigan, and Ohio State ultimately pulled him in after Ryan Day was hired. Then you got Garrett Wilson, a 5-star receiver out of Austin, Texas, who basically set the entire summer on fire by committing to Texas. Spurning Texas because he's in Austin, committing to Ohio State and set off World War III between Ohio State and Texas in the Twitter war there. But then also going down to Georgia, getting Harry Miller, Jameson Williams out of Missouri. So the players that they got are still top-end kids. And then if you look at where they're sitting in 2020, they've got a class that's already got 7 commitments, and it's a top-5 class at this point. And I think now with obviously with the summer last year with Urban being suspended for the first 3 games, the uncertainty, is he going to retire? Is he not going to retire? Now Ryan Day and his staff head into a full recruiting cycle. They'll head into the spring. They headed into January, really knowing that he's there for the long haul. So that takes away a lot of the uncertainty. Now you're going to see Ohio State, I think, be back to that top-5 class, not from just a number standpoint, but now because there's stability in place once and for all.
Ryan Day, of course, not the only new coach in college football, and I know we ask you this question every year, but among some of the other names, Brandon, who impressed you with their ability to come on campus and make an early impact on the recruiting trail?
Well, you know, I think it's going to be interesting because you look at their class, it wasn't that highly ranked, but I kind of like what Mel Tucker did over at Colorado, and part of that's because I think that, you know, you look at the success that he had as an assistant coach at Georgia, just kind of, he's been everywhere. He's been in the NFL. He's been in the collegiate ranks, but you know, he kind of comes into a region that he's not as familiar with. And that's always the one gamble you take when you hire a guy who doesn't have a lot of ties to a specific region. Where's his connection going to come from? Can he convince the kids that come from where his main territory has been to go to this new region? And I like what Colorado did in this class. It was only ranked 9th, but considering that there were a lot of players that decommitted when Mike McIntyre left, what he was able to bring in, he brought in Levante Chenault, who's the younger brother, LaVasca Chenault, who obviously was a star for Colorado this last season. They got Joshua Allen to stay on board. He was one of the top JUCO linebackers in the country, originally from Oregon, then played at Arizona Western. They were able to keep Tariq Luckett, who actually didn't sign in December. Looked like he may end up going elsewhere. Oregon and USC were pushing for him, but he decided to stick with Colorado. So I like not only who Mel Tucker really held on to in this class, but then also being able to go in and get some key guys. And I think that as he gets his feet under himself, they've already gotten a commitment from 2020 in Colorado. The big key for Mel Tucker is going to be, more than anything, is when there's that elite talent. This is setting up to be the best high school class in Colorado in a long time. If he can really prioritize the state of Colorado like Kirby Smart did right when he got to Georgia, then I think that if Tucker can do that, that's going to give him an advantage, because then he can then use his guys that have had California in there as their backyard. Then he can go back into the Southeast and really get Colorado back up to where I think people our age are used to seeing them, where they were when they were in the Big 8 and the Big 12 early on.
So let's follow this string. Who else is, it doesn't have to be a new coach, it could be a coach who has shifted things, but whose strategy is noticeably different from what they've done, or perhaps what coaches before them have done? You talked about Michigan and Jim Harbaugh sort of, you know, being a little bit more low key this year in terms of putting the Michigan brand out there. Who else has said, okay, we've usually zigged, now we're going to zag. We've usually stayed local, now we're going national. We've usually gone national, now we're going local. Who has shifted the way they've done things?
I would say UCLA, and it's not been in a great way, but yeah, it's been very different. I mean, it was one of those things that at one point where you know, you could count how many players had an offer that was committable from UCLA on one hand. There were a lot of players that claimed offers from UCLA, from Jim Moore and his staff. And then Chip Kelly came in and basically said, yes, your offer still counts. No, your offer doesn't count. And there just never seemed to be an emphasis on recruiting during the spring and really into the summer. And then when the season came around, you couple that with a 3-9 season. Now you have no momentum on the field. And so we were used to seeing UCLA finish with top 20 classes. You know, whether they finish like that on the field, that was another story. But they were recruiting well. They were recruiting aggressively, offering a lot of players. And then they kind of go against that complete grain with Chip Kelly. And it ends up being a, you know, by what we've been used to seeing, a pretty unimpressive class, pretty mad class as far as UCLA is concerned. But, you know, we'll see if it works. They decided to try this new strategy of offering guys on the eighth day of the month. They offered 20 guys on Friday. It seemed to be more players they offered on Friday than they did in the entire 2019 cycle. So we'll see if the strategy to maybe pick up the pace a little bit more works from Chip Kelly. But when you've seen how UCLA recruited under Jim Mora and now see how it is been under Kelly, it definitely was one of those moments where I think people in the Pac-12 are just going like, what in the heck are they doing? What's going on there?
Is this a matter of Chip Kelly having the cachet to say, these are the guys I want for my program and I'm not changing how I do things?
1,000% yes. It's Chip Kelly saying, this is how I'm going to do it. And if you don't like it, then look somewhere else. But, you know, can that strategy that maybe worked at Oregon in 2008 or 2009 or 2010, 11 and 12 work in 2019 in the age of recruiting with social media, in the age of, you know, making yourself visible, making yourself have buzz? Look at the other schools in the Pac-12 that when they go on an unofficial visit, or I'm sorry, when a kid comes in on an unofficial visit, or when the coaches go out during the evaluation period, everybody in the world knows that either that kid's on campus or those coaches are on that kid's campus. UCLA just said everything so under the radar, and it had to have been by design. It had to be the way Chip wanted to do it. But can that work in 2019 when so much about recruiting is about visibility and the social media aspect of it?
All right, Dan, hit the pause button.
Done.
I need to know, are you sick and tired of paying high interest rates on all your credit cards?
I'm done with it, Ty. I have to be.
Do you want to consolidate multiple credit card payments down to just one payment at a lower rate?
This seems to make sense to my brain.
If so, Lightstream is a no-brainer. You can refinance your credit card balances with a credit card consolidation loan from our friends over at Lightstream and get a rate as low as 6.14 APR with auto pay. The rate's fixed. It's not going to go up. There are zero fees involved. You can apply online in minutes. It's so easy, you don't even need to leave your house. You can even get your money as soon as the same day that you apply. If you want to save more, our listeners can do so by getting an interest rate discount. The only way to get it, though, is by going to Lightstream, LightStream.com/solid. That's LightStream.com/solid. Of course, subject to credit approval. The rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. One more time, visit LightStream.com/solid. Also, Dan, did you know about Robinhood? They are an investing app. They let you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, yeah, Cryptos, all of it commission-free. Other places charge up to $10 per trade. Robinhood doesn't do that. They don't charge commission. You can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. It's simple. It's intuitive. It's easy. It's fun for newcomers. Check out Robinhood. You can also view things like stock collections, 100 most popular stocks. If you're looking for a quick way to get started, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Right now, they're going to give listeners of our show a free stock like Apple, like Ford, like Sprint to help you build your portfolio. It's a good deal. Check it out. Solid.robinhood.com. One more time, that is solid, S-O-L-I-D .robinhood.com.
Who are the schools that, how they did on this in this year's cycle, in the 2019 cycle, stand out to you as, okay, this is who they are from now on, either in a really good or bad way, I guess, outside of UCLA. So who is that team who really made the jump that you expect to stay up pretty high? And who is a team that has fallen and you don't really see a way that they can get back up?
I would say Oregon. I mean, we know that Oregon has been able to recruit. They've had years where they've brought in elite players like DeAnthony Thomas and Eric Armstead in consecutive years, but the thoroughness of which they recruited this year, I mean, that's attributed largely to the approach Mario Cristobal took this year as the head coach. And I think you look back to his time at Alabama, where he was once the national recruiter of the year. He was an SEC recruiter of the year. He understands the importance of the head coach getting involved in recruiting, but he also understands the importance of empowering and enabling his staff to get out and be aggressive recruiters. And you would talk to kids that would take their unofficial visit, and they would say, man, the second I got off the elevator, there were 30 coaches and staffers cheering and yelling and screaming for me when I got off, and that left an impression on me. And so that comes down from the top. And I think you're going to see Oregon be a school. I mean, they're offering a lot of players. They probably offer more players than any Pac-12 school does, but they're also hitting on a large rate of the guys that they really, really want. There was a great article in Sports Illustrated last week about the offers that are committable and that are uncommittable. But I think, you know, a lot of schools do those kind of offers. But I also think that when Oregon really kind of sets their sights on a kid, especially in this 2019 class, they see the success of that with getting that kid's commitment and then ultimately him signing. So they ended up with the top class in the Pac-12. And I think, you know, Oregon has a brand. There's enough of these kids that to them, 2016 was an anomaly. That was the exception to the rule. In their minds, Oregon has been the prime team in the West Coast and the Pac-12 for the last 8 to 10 years. This was a team that a lot of these kids grew up watching. So these Southern California kids weren't necessarily dreaming of playing for SC like you would think or for UC like you think. They were dreaming of playing for Oregon. And you saw that in this class with how they recruited Southern California. So I think that's a school that absolutely is going to be a top 10, top 12 type recruiting program over the next couple of years, as long as Mario Cristobal is there, because he's just got a completely different approach than Chip Kelly and Mark Helfrich did, in that he wants to be visible. He understands recruiting is the lifeblood of the program, so he's going to continue to get out there. I would say that they're probably that one that you kind of look at and say, all right, they're going to be around. They're going to be a factor. They're going to be a problem for some schools to deal with, not just in the Pac-12, but nationally. Mm-hmm. And then as far as on the flip side, I mean, is Florida State at 18, is that going to be the norm? I mean, can Willie Taggart get this thing figured out? We're not used to seeing Florida State down that low. We're used to seeing them being a top 10 team and usually a top 5 team in recruiting, you know, but there they are at 18. Is this going to speak? Is this speaking to a larger issue? And if it is a larger issue, how long does this issue go on? Because all the buzz now in the state of Florida is going to Manny Diaz. It's going to Dan Mullen. And Florida State, which has always seemingly had the most buzz of any school, certainly over the last decade, now they're running third. And then you still have the, you know, not that they're losing guys readily to UCF, but even UCF's getting a lot more buzz than them. So Willie Taggart's got to get that fixed quick. Otherwise, they may be a top 15 to 20, 25, which most schools would be happy about, but not with yep. Florida State, not when you're sitting on a gold mine of talent like they are.
Well, since you did Oregon, we got to do Notre Dame. Riddle me this, Brandon, about Notre Dame. Brian Kelly has the Irish to a point where pretty consistently they're turning in very strong recruiting classes. Recruiting is not so much the issue at Notre Dame. But then came along that playoff semifinal matchup against Clemson. Now, they ran into a buzzsaw, granted, but there are a lot of fans out there asking. They're looking at the recruiting class and they're saying, what did Notre Dame do to make up that talent gap? What did Notre Dame do to make themselves better and more competitive against the top echelon of college football? Is there a tell in this class how they got better?
I mean, I think that they got better in the trenches. Now, whether that's going to make a difference next year or in 2020 that quickly, probably not. I think they're going to see their bigger recruiting bump going into the 2020 class, because a lot of these kids' minds were already made up before Notre Dame even played in the playoff game, before the season even started. So I think they're really going to see whether they can close that gap start to happen in the 2020 class, when those kids had a full year of recruiting. And now when Notre Dame walks in the spring during the evaluation period, you know, kids remember, hey, they still did go to a playoff game. It may have been a blowout, but Alabama got blown out. And I guess if there's one good thing that happened to Notre Dame, it's that Bama got beat even worse in the national championship game. So people are just going to look at, dude, Clemson was on a different level. What I think Notre Dame did really well this year, though, is they did a great job on the offensive line and the defensive line, really in just in the trenches. And that's where I think a lot of schools have had the advantage on Notre Dame in the years past, is that they've been able to beat them up front, and which is different because we're used to seeing Notre Dame having good linemen. But I think that you know, they've recruited even better linemen. They still got some, you know, key players at the skill positions coming in. But I really think moving forward in 2020, it's going to be the year where that gap really starts to get closer. And I mean, there's some guys in this Notre Dame class that I really am high on. I love the offensive lineman that they've got, Zeke Correll, Quinn Carroll, out of Minnesota, or Ohio, Minnesota, respectively. They've got, you know, a really good defensive lineman out of Texas, Inanna Osapamensah. They went out west, got a couple of really good players from Northern California, Isaiah Rutherford, who was a Cal legacy. His dad was a former starting running back for Cal. He spurned a lot of West Coast schools to go to Notre Dame. And then Isaiah Foskey, who was one of the top tight end recruits out west. And then Notre Dame turned it on and said, we think you're going to be an elite defensive end. And he became open to the defensive line idea. And the Irish got him to announce on signing day. But then the best player in this class, in my opinion, is Kyle Hamilton. You know, he was a guy that was under the radar. He goes to the opening finals last summer and was fantastic, and then goes to the All-American Bowl this year and really just shined from beginning to end. And here's a guy who wasn't even in the top 247 going into his junior year. He finishes as the number one safety in the country by 24/7 Sports and a top 15 player nationally out of Atlanta, and a guy that I think that's the kind of player you need to sign a lot of to really be able to compete with the Clemson and the Alabama type programs year in and year out.
To be clear, Ty, Brandon mentioned Oregon doing well in establishing itself as a potential regional and national power with Mario Cristobal, but did not go through the class.
Right. No,
so,
of course.
In terms of where Oregon's class ended up as a top, what, 6, 7, 8 class in the country, and, you know, I think they're somewhere around 10, 11, 12 in terms of talent level and average grade for these players, who are the names that you believe to be not necessarily instant impact guys, but you are confident will leave a mark in the Pac-12 in the years to come?
I mean, obviously, Kayvon Thibodeau, he was the number two player in the composite ranking, the number one player in the state of California, the highest rated player that I think Oregon has signed in the modern era, a defensive end who's going to come in and play right away. I mean, he's got that type of ability where he's not just going to compete for playing time. It's going to be a matter of how many snaps does he get. He's going to be starting. You know, and can he? It's just a matter of does he put on the weight this offseason, because he's got the speed, he's got the quickness, he's got the athleticism to be an impact guy. Just needs to get a little bit of weight to handle those offensive linemen in college. But he is obviously the crown jewel of this class. But then there's other guys like Mikhail Wright, a elite corner, top 50 player nationally out of Southern California. Jonah Ta'anu'u out of Harbor City Narbonne High School, which is another school that USC has recruited well out of these last couple of years. Top 10 offensive lineman nationally. Micah Pittman is one of my favorite football players in this class. A Calabasas Coyote for you, Dan. So
yeah.
I know you'll be rooting for him. The son of former NFL running back Michael Pittman and the younger brother of that SC receiver Michael Pittman Jr. Micah, you know, may not have the physical traits that some of the other receivers have in this class that are those 6'2", 6'3 guys, but he's just lightning a bottle. He's such a physical, he's just got a lot of dog in him. And he gets out and he makes plays happen. And he's another guy that I really like in this class. And then Patrick Herbert, who's the younger brother of Justin Herbert. He was the number one player in the state of Oregon. Really didn't see a need to look anywhere else. He committed to Oregon very early on. He's a top 10 tight end nationally. So, you know, they only signed one player from the state of Oregon, but they made it count. It was from Eugene, and it was the brother of their quarterback. And was that enough to maybe keep Justin at school for another year? Who knows? I know that was something that was talked about by both of them and something they would both like to pursue. And if you're an Oregon fan, you'll just hang your hat on the fact that maybe that was the ultimate tipping point for him to keep him there. So they did a really good job in California. They did a good job in Oregon, but then they did recruit nationally, went down to Florida, got a couple of kids. They got a top five JUCO player, a 6'7", 345 pound lineman out of Texas from the JUCO ranks. So they did a really good job of recruiting the whole country, which is what they've been able to do these last couple of years, but really made California kind of be the home base this season.
Two teams that really did a great job, and you mentioned this with Notre Dame and how they were absolutely a playoff team and have translated that this year moving forward into recruiting success. Two teams, though, Oklahoma and Washington, have both steadily grown their recruiting footprint and the level of talent they're bringing in. I know Washington did a very good job along the lines, and Oklahoma brought in what appears to be the best receiver class in the country. Do you feel like this level of talent for these schools and this depth of talent is the new normal for the Sooners and the Huskies?
There's no question. And I think with obviously the hiring of Alex Grinch, there's going to be a renewed effort to get big time defensive players for Oklahoma, because offense hasn't been their problem. But if you're having a hard time tackling teams and you're having a hard time stopping teams, you better be able to score. So what do? They go get the two of the top three receivers in the country, including one of them being from Georgia in Jadon Haselwood, who was the number one receiver in the country. They keep Theo Weiss in the mix, and then they go get the top quarterback in the country in Spencer Rattler. So they've added better talent to an already talented offensive depth chart. So that gives them continued weapons on their offensive arsenal. But defensively, that's where they really are going to probably see a focus over these next couple classes. There's still some good players on the defensive side of the ball. Don't get me wrong, but I think this class was really highlighted by their offensive talent, which makes sense because Lincoln Riley is an offensive guru. But now I think with the presence of Alex Grinch, there's going to be even more renewed effort to improve in the defense. And this class was a good start towards that. And as they continue to really bring in top end defensive talent to go with this just special elite offensive talent, Oklahoma's not going anywhere for a while. Washington, on the other hand, you look at what's been the difference in some of the games that they've lost these last couple of years on the national scale. It's been usually up front. It's been not just the skill positions. They've had the skill positions, but it's been the offensive line, the defensive line. And they bring in arguably the best defensive line class the Pac-10 has seen, or the Pac-12 has seen in probably a decade. They got four big-time defensive tackles. They got two or three really good defensive ends, a great linebacking core, a great defensive back core. And then offensively, they were able to bring in five really talented offensive linemen, some that are already on campus and will be a part of spring football. They've got a four-star quarterback who was a four-year starter down in Graham Washington and Dylan Morris. And then they signed in probably the best addition to the class late was getting the decision from Puka Nacua, who was the Utah player of the year, the Polynesian football player of the year, the All-American offensive player of the year, over 2,000 yards receiving. He had been a commit to USC, but then when didn't sign in December, when Cliff Kingsbury left, it looked like it was going to be an Oregon-Washington battle, and he signed with Washington yesterday, announced for them on Sunday night. So that just gave them another threat offensively, where they did really well on the lines. They could have used one more pass catcher, and they got one in one of the best in the West. And I think you're going to continue to see Chris Peterson and his staff recruit at a high level now that they've got just this plethora of talent coming in, but then also going out and getting drafted high.
Clemson's never in these conversations of teams that are finishing top two, top three, top four, but they're clearly one of the two teams that are in college football's top tier. Are they just better at evaluating? Are they better at developing? Are they better at just keeping guys from transferring? What is it about Clemson and how they recruit that is uniquely successful?
Well, I think they're better at developing than probably just about anyone. I mean, you see some of these guys that come in that maybe aren't as highly touted, and then they leave and they set all kinds of records. They've been multi-year starters, but they've gotten a lot of bang for their buck on the top rated guys they have brought in. Obviously Mitch Hyatt, a four-year starter who was an outstanding recruit when he came out. Trevor Lawrence, one of the best quarterbacks, I think, in the history of recruiting, comes in and wins the national championship. So not only have they done a good job developing, but they've gotten that impact from those high-level players in a sport where you see a higher bust ratio than maybe you do in college basketball from your highly rated players. They're getting everything that they expect out of those highly rated players. And when they lose a guy like a Hunter Johnson or a Kelly Bryant, it's because you've got a generational talent at quarterback like they did with Trevor Lawrence. And so you look at this class and you really can't say there's a weakness anywhere. And you look at some of the guys they have in this class that maybe aren't as highly ranked as others. And because they do such a good job of development, and because they have so much stability in that coaching staff, that allows those players to develop and be a impact player for Clemson, whether it's earlier in their career. But like you said, Dan, they seem to do a better job, with the exception of quarterback, of keeping those guys from leaving and just being understanding. If you got to wait your turn, you're going to get your shot. And when you get your shot, you're going to make the most of it.
As we know, coaches that are coaching at G5 schools, if they're successful, they become coaches coaching at Power 5 schools. So in the G5 sphere, who put together a class and which coach stands out as that recruiter that, I guess, made your, I've been using this phrase for whatever reason, made your antennas buzz?
My antennas were buzzing a lot because of what Brian Harsin did at Boise State. And, they really have made themselves a presence as probably the best group of five program over the last 15 years on the field and recruiting. I think obviously UCF is closing the gap. They've had a nice run these last 4 or 5 years with the BCS Bowl and then 2 New Year's Six Bowls. But obviously Josh Heupel, is he going to be able to continue to maintain this program? It sure seems to. They have a good recruiting class. They actually went back into Hawaii to get their quarterback in Dylan Gabriel, who comes from the same high school that Mackenzie Milton does. Gabriel had offers from Georgia and USC late and then decided to sign with UCF. So that's the kind of recruiting battles that you want to keep winning when you're a group of five coach, that you can go up against the traditional power five schools and beat them. But then you look at what Boise State did. I mean, they had 3 4 stars just in the 24/7 sports composite and 6 in the 24/7 rankings. You look at their quarterback that they got, Hank Bachmeier. He was a record-setting quarterback in California, threw for over 10,000 yards. He had offers from numerous Power 5 schools, stuck with Boise State. When other schools would lose their quarterback, they would try to make a run at him. He stuck with Boise State. And I think that shows you what this program is doing, where they're not losing players that want those Power 5 offers like they did years ago when they were still kind of the BCS busters and BCS schools would come around. They could be the 10th best team in a BCS conference, but those kids wanted to play in a BCS conference. I think Chris Peterson and now Brian Harrison have done such a good job of developing players, showing that they can shine at that level and be drafted at a high rate and a high level, that these kids are looking at Boise State as a destination program. So it's no surprise that probably the two most successful group of five schools over the last 10, 15 years are the two schools that did the best job recruiting wise this year.
All right. Brandon Hoffman from 24/7 Sports, our resident encyclopedia on all things recruiting. I've got two more for you, and then I promise we'll let you out of here. The first is, of course, we have to talk about Mac Brown and Les Miles coming back into the college football sphere after a long layover away from the game. How would you evaluate how both of those guys did now, back on the recruiting trail, trying to build up their respective programs?
Well, I want to look and see what the safeties at North Carolina is bringing in, because I want to see how good of quarterbacks they'll be when they leave. But in the meantime, I think that both have classes that, considering the later start that they both got, North Carolina finished in the top 35 class. Now, the year before, they were in the top 20. But, considering how late in the game that they kind of had to get in with this class, they were able to flip Sam Howell, who had been a long time commit to Florida State. He was a quarterback, was committed, had a really good week at the All-American Bowl and had a good showing in the game. He was a top 3 dual threat quarterback nationally. To flip him from Florida State to North Carolina obviously was big. They were able to get some of these key guys like Eugene Asante, who really seemed to be kind of one of the hot names during the January signing period, because he didn't announce in December and decided to use January. So he kind of was getting poached by everybody and everybody was trying to get him. So for them to be able to sign him on signing day, I think that just shows you, what Mac Brown can do in a quick little 2-3 month window. That's what he and his staff are going to be able to do over the course of the next year. And then with Kansas, with Les Miles, there's not going to be short on attention about the Kansas program. And I think it's different than, maybe when Charlie Weiss was there, because Les is a guy that the media loves. And I think fans of college football just love seeing what he's going to do next. And he really used that to his advantage. And Kansas ended up being able to get a 4-star defensive lineman on signing day out of Texas, Stephen Parker, 6'4", 220-pound founder, who's a fantastic pass rusher, and those are the kind of battles that I think Les Miles is going to find himself getting involved in a little bit more. They only got 1 4-star in this class, but I think you're going to see them at 2 or 3 or 4 every year for these next couple of years, because Les knows how to slay it in the living room with the families. He knows how to aggressively recruit, and he's still well thought of in a lot of major regions in the country. So that's going to allow him to go into those schools. And even though he's at Kansas, he's not at LSU anymore, because people genuinely love Les Miles and high school coaches love him. And a lot of coaches in certain parts of the country where he wants to recruit love him. That's going to open the door for him.
Finally, and most importantly on this show, my favorite name of the 2019 class, he's an offensive tackle. He goes by the name of Pierce Quick. And I love it because it's got a Little John oxymoronic quality to it. I know you are someone with a keen interest in names such as these, Brandon. If not Pierce Quick, then who in this class was your favorite name?
Oh, man. I mean, it's hard to top Pierce Quick. There was one kid in Oregon's class, and I'm really usually good at Polynesian names, But this one, because of all the vowels in it, it still has floored me. And I've just like stopped trying to name it. It's Malasaila Amuve Lalulu.
Whoa.
And because of all, I mean, it's like a Wheel of Fortune gold mine with all the vowels in there. And then he's 6'7", 345 pounds on top of that. So it makes sense that one of the biggest players in this class has one of the biggest and longest names. But, you know, we were kind of robbed of the St. Brown family this year, with them no longer having any other children, no more Equinemius, no more Osiris, no more Amun-Ra's. So, you know, I'm having to go with the long, multi-hyphenated names as the ones that really kind of wet the whistle this year.
We're working towards General Booty in 2021 in Texas. We're working towards General Booty. And I believe, and maybe you can take a stab at this for next year when we do our show, the number one quarterback in the 2020 class, his name is pronounced...
DJ Uiagalelei.
Uiagalelei. Okay. That's okay. That's easier than I thought it was going to be. Ty, you are going to struggle.
God bless his parents for naming him DJ.
Oh, the best.
Because he's becoming a two-letter name. We just know him by his first name. And thank you, Mr. and Ms. Uiagalelei, for doing that. But I've now figured out how to spell it without having to go back and copy and paste. And I can spell that thing masterfully. So good luck to Oregon or Clemson right now, because those are the two schools leading for him. Good luck to their PA announcers and their radio play-by-play guys for having to start. We might as well start practicing those names now.
The DJU era, I think, is what it's going to be.
I like it.
Again, Brandon Huffman, truly an encyclopedia for all things recruiting, Brandon. Can't thank you enough, man. Thanks for stopping by again.
He's our kind of guy, Ty. He's an OKG.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Always enjoy it.
All righty, Dan, there you go. That is Brandon Huffman, longtime friend of the podcast. I can't even count the number of times we've had him on this show over the last decade, but I've said it time and again, an encyclopedia, a wealth of recruiting knowledge. I always feel like I learned something. I did in this case as well, and I'm guessing you did too.
I did. And, you know, it's one of those things where we could have easily done a 3-hour show. And I'm sure somebody's going to listen to this show and say, you know, why don't we talk more about the job, you know, Jeremy Pruitt did at Tennessee after a disappointing season. They bring in like 12 or 13 blue chip guys. Or why don't we talk more about Auburn? Or why don't we talk about Penn State and the job they did? I think they finished second in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
The reason is there are so many teams. There are so many teams to talk about. So we just want to present him with a question where his mind goes with the question is where it goes. But certainly, and we mentioned this before, after the early signing period, Nebraska did a good job after they finished the season in an encouraging way. I think they finished with the top 20 class. Stanford normally finishes a bit higher. They don't take huge classes, obviously having academic restrictions, but they still finish in the top 25. Ole Miss, after a pretty terrible year, Matt Luke did a decent job on the recruiting trail. Arkansas, you know, they will offer playing time because after not winning a game in the SEC,
yeah, it's all available.
Jobs to be won. Wisconsin, actually, with a pretty decent class, finishing in the top 30. Miami falls, and it couldn't have helped that Mark Richt left when he did, which I believe was after the early signing period. Yeah. But that may point to how much that staff was engaged with everything near the end when things seemed to fall apart for the Hurricanes. And you asked a good question about Les Miles and Mack Brown, North Carolina, especially with that quarterback poll that Brandon Huffman talked about. I think his name is Sam Howell from Florida State. They finish in an interesting way as they try to get out of the bottom of the ACC. There's definitely a gulf, it seems, between Texas, Oklahoma, and the rest of the Big 12.
Yeah.
The top of the Big Ten looks like it kind of should. USC, a disappointment in the Pac-12, but whenever things do eventually, and they will stabilize in LA, I expect USC to challenge for top five spots once again. But an interesting year, nonetheless, on the recruiting trail. LSU with a, I will only speak for myself.
No.
I was surprised that they were as successful as they were with the schedule that they had this past season, and for them to finish with a top five class and keep that momentum, super impressive. But yeah, interesting to see, especially Alabama, just holding on to that top spot, even with losing the coaches they did.
That's why I said to him, are they just showing off at this point? And I don't mean to be flippant. I don't mean to dismiss another strong effort by Alabama. Sure. Clearly there is some strategy at play with the guys they're going after, but at some point, and that point was long ago, the Alabama program hit critical mass under Nick Saban, where it really legitimately started recruiting itself.
Yeah.
And now it's an embarrassment of riches. Clemson's getting there. It looks like Georgia's getting there as well. So we will certainly have to see how all of this plays out on the field. But again, recruiting is the lifeblood. We did a great show on recruiting. I say great. I'm proud of the show we did a year ago. Go back and look at how recruiting works.
Yes.
The show that we did, we reported out how the process goes down if you are a top-level recruit, if you're a coach, if you're a media member. We can post a link to that show if you're interested in the description of this one.
Yeah.
In the meantime, Dan.
Sure.
We are going to continue with our conference autopsy rulings. We've done two of them thus far. We've got a bunch more that we've got in the works here. So stay tuned for that. We'll continue doing Q&A. And we've got a bunch of big stuff in the works over the next couple weeks and months. So I'm very excited about what 2019 has in store. As you know, if you've been listening for a while, or if you just found us out there on the interwebs, we're going to be with you all off season. We're going to be talking college football all off season. We'll do our best to make it as fun as possible and hold you over until the games actually start up in the, August, September timeframe later on this year. So we appreciate you standing by here. You can always post a review if you're going out to Apple, iTunes.com/solidverbal, or really wherever you can find your podcasts. Any review is always very helpful. Check us out on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. And of course, visit the Reddit, the subreddit at reddit.com/r/solidverbal. It's a sub started by verballers for verballers.
Okay, my final out right here is you used an analogy, seasoning cast iron with something, knowledge. Did you season your cast iron pan?
I did, yeah. Oh, of course.
What did you use to season it? Lard? Shortening?
Well, you could use a bunch of different stuff.
Right.
I have been using mostly avocado oil. The trick, I'm told...
Oh, interesting.
...is to use an oil with a high smoke point.
Right.
So you can heat it up and it won't smoke quite as easily. But I've kind of mixed and matched. I've used a little bit of olive oil, which you're not supposed to, but you can. I've used some coconut oil. Coconut oil seems to work pretty well.
So naughty, Ty. You're not supposed to, but you can.
I know. You can do whatever you want. It's a free country.
No, I'm saying like, so when you originally got it, though, you're supposed to season it by, you wipe it down with something and then put it in the oven for like an hour.
They claim, however, the instructions...
Are there varying schools of thought?
I would love to have a sponsorship from Lodge Cast Iron Pans, but we do not.
Hey,
so this is
come at us.
A free plug.
Yeah.
They send it with instructions that say you cook an egg on it. When you get it, wash it, obviously rinse it off, but cook an egg on it first and then start from that point. So that's what I did. Cooked an egg on it.
Okay.
It's gotten progressively less sticky, and I continue to season it after every time I use it. So today,
great.
For example, cook my breakfast on it.
What'd you make?
Just some eggs, you know.
Okay.
Some scrambled eggs, some fried eggs, and put some avocado oil on it, threw it in the oven to set it in.
Some of that.
And so we're enjoying that cast iron life, Dan.
Great to hear. Any questions for me? This is your chance. I promise that the show is going to get bad once we start talking about me having a newborn, and so I'm going to follow through.
Yeah, no, I mean... I want to know all about the conception, but I don't know if we have time to do it on
the show. Oh, my God. So, first, a lot of stretching with bands. Ty.
Okay, right.
Cannot stress that enough. Get the blood flowing.
Well, let me ask you this then. So,
okay.
Because we are running low on time here, and it's towards the end, I have built up, I'm not kidding you, and I won't show this to you, a Google Doc. A Google Doc
with
fatherhood questions.
We have to have a pregnancy, childbirth, childcare with the stupidest man alive, me, episode at some point, a non college football episode related to.
We will do that.
I guess maybe kids and college football.
So we will do that because
how they watch and attend. Yeah.
Listen. You have been catching me off guard for the better part of the last decade.
Yep.
This is my one opportunity to strike on you.
Okay.
I am preparing for this accordingly.
Okay.
You know how I get when I prepare for something.
Yeah, that's true. You are thorough.
Okay. We're working something out. I will keep this very easy, though, because I'm sure there are folks out there who are nearing the end of their commute to work, or they're running the treadmill, or I don't know where you are in the country, maybe even mowing the lawn.
But this is hashtag relatable content.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I need, you said he's almost 3 weeks. Almost 3 weeks.
There, so we're posting this, what, on Wednesday?
Yeah.
He'll be 3 weeks tomorrow.
What is your three-week fatherhood advice for anyone out there? We actually got a question similar to this in the inbox, solidverbal@gmail.com.
That's right. So I would say, because you're going to be down on sleep, because your schedule is going to be different, because you're a new parent, you're not going to know what you're doing. I definitely don't know what I'm doing. I would say something that has helped me immensely from a mindset point of view is they're crying because they're newborns. They're not crying because they hate you. They're not crying because they feel like they're dying or something like that. That's just what they do. Right. So just like I speak sarcastically to my son. So like when I'm changing his diaper and he's wailing, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, poor you. You're being wailed. So I make it a conversation.
Tough love.
I don't get upset. I don't get discouraged by wailing tears. It's now a back and forth that we have.
Go ahead.
I would also recommend, it's going to be a one-way conversation, obviously, but if you're feeding him or her with a bottle, or you're just trying to soothe them to sleep, or you're changing diapers, you're just hanging out with them on a chair or a couch or something like that, I'm just trying to give my son information for life.
Yeah.
So I've gone through where to eat in LA. I've gone through just a very stern talking to about respecting women. Mm-hmm. I've gone through tips for navigating the New York subway system. And it's just, obviously, he has no idea what I'm saying. But there is something soothing about talking to him in a non-baby voice that I think is like, oh, this is the gentleman who's going to try to keep me alive. Cool. I get the cadence of his voice. And it makes you feel like a human being.
Will you go the same route as our friend Stephen Godfrey from Podcast Ain't Played Nobody and play our podcast in hopes that it puts your child to sleep? Because it worked wonders for him.
Is that what he told? Like, did we really help with his child sleeping?
I think that was the only reason that he downloaded us.
That's fine. Again, we've said this before. We're not picky. If you throw us a download, we're grateful. Do with it. Once it's yours, you can do whatever you want with it. So, yeah, I haven't really played music or podcasts for him yet as a way to get him to sleep, but I'm open to it. So far, he's a good sleeper. So far, as long as he's rocked and danced with, we listened to a lot of Chuck Berry today and danced around, and that seemed to help. But I think the podcasting thing is going to be smart. I use baseball podcasts to fall to sleep. So yeah,
good
I would be a hypocrite if I said that podcasts aren't a great way to soothe yourself to sleep. So it'll probably work for him as well.
All right. Well, we will check back in a week. Thank you again to our friend Brandon Huffman from 24/7 Sports. Again, check out AveryStrongDIPG.org for more info on his great foundation. Daniel, I will talk to you in about 7 days, right?
Let's do it. I'm ready.
For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt, catch y'all in a week. Enjoy your week. Enjoy your weekend. Until next time, stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.